Civilization, where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.
So it's Friday, June the 16th, and in the UK we've had something of a national disaster this week. Many of our UK listeners will be well aware of what I'm talking about, but perhaps it's not so much of a big story across the world. I suspect it has been reported because it's pretty dramatic. Certainly the footage, live footage from the other night was certainly dramatic indeed. So I suspect many news websites and TV channels picked it up from across the globe. It's one of the biggest stories really going at the moment. So this is the Grenfell Tower fire in Kensington, in within London, North Kensington. So this happens in the very early morning, sort of around, I think there were initial reports of a fire coming in at around, I think it was 1 or 2 in the morning, and this would have been so 3 days ago now as I'm speaking. So this was earlier in the week, on the early hours of Wednesday morning. And at first I didn't actually realize the extent of this story. I've had quite a heavy few nights socially, just with work and things, and just lots of things have been going on for me this week. So I didn't actually come across this story really until today. And largely I knew that there had been a fire in a tower block, and I saw some of the footage on the news, and I was amazed at the scale of the fire. But the initial reports were, I suspect it was almost like they were downplaying the story, perhaps. That's certainly the impression I got, because I didn't get the sense that many people had died. It sounded as if maybe initial reports were that 10 people had been killed in the fire, I think, 10 or 12. And that there didn't seem to be any sense that that number was going to rise. I mean, this is purely based on the sense I got personally, and I didn't actually delve into the news too much. So it may well be that people were saying that no, that number's going to significantly rise, but I personally didn't cotton on to that. So I kind of went about my week and didn't really take this story on board. I just thought, well, that's horrible, but luckily most people managed to get out, and it's going to raise questions about fire safety in towers. But that was all I really thought. But today, I've had a bit of a quieter day, and I've had time to absorb this news story. And I've also seen the mainstream media kind of take up perhaps just take it up a notch in terms of the reporting of this and the angle. And I think really what's happened is, and I was talking to Peter about this earlier, who obviously is the other half of this podcast, my brother, and we kind of feel that perhaps, I mean, I made the suggestion that this was such a horrific story and such a horrific event, but it's almost taken a few days for it to sink in, the actual scale of it. So I've got friends now that are only just starting to talk about this on Facebook, for example. There was no mention of it on Thursday, and not a great deal until probably around sort of 3 o'clock this afternoon. That seemed to be when things started to happen, like links were being shared about the disaster and all this business and reports and things. And it's almost as if there was a delayed reaction, which I think is interesting. And I think perhaps it might be to do with the fact that perhaps the media were guilty of really not saying that what the scale of this was. And Lily Allen, who's a musician in Britain, who I've got meaning, she said things in the past I've been slightly unsure about, but I think her heart's absolutely in the right place. And she said on TV the other day, I think, that and absolutely kudos to her for saying it, because she got a lot of slack for it, over social media. But she openly said a few days ago, look, the media are downplaying this. They're saying that maybe 17 people have died. Well, no, it's more like 150 from what I'm hearing, because she was hearing reports on the ground of the scale of this. And the mainstream media just rejected it, and she got a lot of, I think she was taken off air, or I think her interview on a particular media channel, I think perhaps it was the BBC, because it was a Channel 4 that she originally was talking on, I think they cancelled it because they weren't prepared to allow her to say that, which I think is pretty shocking. It's almost as if the media were refusing to accept the scale of the disaster they were dealing with. They were just sort of taking the government's line and not really reporting much beyond that. But I think they couldn't maintain that, obviously. So today, Friday, things really have started to bubble up to the surface, and things are starting to come out. The truth is coming out now about what actually has happened here, and people are beginning to wake up to the reality that this is an utter scandal. And I've been absorbed by this all day, and to the point where I was getting myself very upset and very frustrated. I didn't really know what to do with that sense of frustration. I was actually going to get a train up to London to take part in the protests which are going on up there, which I think are probably still going on now as I speak at almost midnight. But I think perhaps the main parts of them have died down now. It was outside Westminster and 10 Downing Street. But I just ended up not going up because I just felt to myself, well, look, I feel like I need to just research this and understand this, and I don't really want to just turn up there and out of the blue feel that it's going to somehow help me, because I don't think it necessarily would at the moment. I'm not saying I won't. I feel like I do want to go up there at some point. But in terms of the facts, I mean, basically the Glenfell Tower was a 1970s tower block in North Kensington, which is a poor part of Kensington. You've got the north-south divide of Kensington, where you've got this very affluent southern section and a very poor northern section. And there's this horrible contrast there between the two. And it's classed as a brutalist style building. I mean, that's just the name architects give that particular design. It's a sort of from the brutalist school of architectural design, but it's essentially just a big conventional tower block built in the 70s. And I found a very interesting quote on Wikipedia about this, and the Wikipedia page on this fire has been fascinating, because I find Wikipedia incredible, because the speed at which this page has been generated and been improved and tinkered with and edited and expanded, it's been pretty incredible to see over the last couple of days or hours, even, as I should say. And many people knock Wikipedia, and it frustrates me, because I remember reading up on Wikipedia a long time ago, because it's been going a long time, and the way they moderate Wikipedia is so intense and so strict that it is actually a very reliable source of information. I mean, a lot of the time you can see that there are perhaps inaccuracies in places, but within a day or two, those will be gone. And you can't just post nonsense on there, because it will just get taken down very, very quickly. It's very advanced algorithms and a good, solid moderation system that goes on Wikipedia. But anyway, there's a quote here from an architect who essentially said of the Grenfell Tower, this guy was the original lead architect of the building, Nigel Whitbread. He said in 2016 that the tower had been designed with attention to strength following the Ronan Point collapse of 1968. And here's the quote: "And from what I can see, could last another 100 years. So in other words, this was a solid, solid structure. This was a seriously well-built building, not some easy, shoddy, quick fix type solution. Just because it's built in the 70s and it's obviously now coming up to 50 plus years old, just because that's a fact, doesn't mean that the actual building itself is somehow structurally unsound. This building was built to last, perhaps even more so than the new builds we get built nowadays. This thing was solid. And there was no reason why this thing was going to have any issues going forward." So I just thought that was an interesting little quote, that's all. So the official line at the moment is that in the early hours of that fateful night, a few nights ago, there was a fire caused by a empty fridge, and it caused and that's essentially what all we know at the moment. So in one particular flat, on one of the lower floors, there was a fire. I think it was seventh floor, I think, I remember reading somewhere, I'm not entirely sure. There was a fire, and that fire quickly became completely out of control. It became an aggressive fire, fueled by all manner of things from what it looks like, and we'll get onto that in a moment, I guess, because that's going to be a big factor. But this thing spread quick. Fire services arrived within 6 minutes. Their response time was very good. they got there, they realised the scale of the situation, so they got reinforcements. There were 250-odd firefighters there at one point. They were doing three-hour shifts fighting this thing all through the early hours. And it seems to me that the firefighters essentially have been completely shocked at the speed that this fire engulfed the building. It happened within 15 minutes or so. From one single apartment or flat, it expanded out, climbed up the sides of the building, and engulfed the whole building eventually. And the smoke was billowing all across London. And it was reminiscent of 9/11 in many ways, just in terms of the spectacle of what you were seeing unfold on TV. But I think it's because it happens in the middle of the night. I guess people woke up to the news and they didn't quite know what had happened. They just figured, shit, something's happened in the middle of the night, quite nasty. But I guess if it had been a different time of day, it would have gained more attention more quickly, perhaps. I don't know. But the tragic thing is that there were probably around 600 people in the flat, in the block. Many got out, thankfully, but many didn't. And we don't know how many didn't at the moment. And today's been very sad because that number of fatalities has gone up and up and up. I think this morning they were saying 17. They're now saying 30. And I think there's now implications that there's 70 people missing. So go figure. We're probably looking at 70 fatalities, perhaps more. Perhaps something closer to 100. Perhaps even more than 100. Time will tell. And what's very even more harsh about it is the fact that most of those people have perished and their bodies have literally perished, and they won't be. There's a strong chance that due to the heat and the way the fire engulfed the whole area and the intensity of it, many remains simply will never be identified. And there's the other factor, which is that they haven't been able to reach those floors yet. So even now, 3 days on, most of those bodies are still in the block on the higher floors. So although they're classed as missing, essentially we know where those missing people are in terms of the bodies. So that's a tragedy. But what makes this a scandal is what the information that's coming to light now about what caused this fire to spread so quickly. There are lots of theories at the moment, but I think it seems to me that people are starting to point the blame towards what's known as cladding. So cladding is something that at first glance it seems like some sort of superfluous thing to add to a tower, but it appears to have two purposes, from what I can tell. It's there to perhaps act as a means to allow for a greater deal of energy efficiency and to retain heat in older style buildings. That's one idea for cladding and why it's there. And another is more to do with the fact that it improves the overall site, or it improves the image of a tower block. Tower blocks could look quite a concrete and 70s, and all of a sudden when you clad it with this cladding, and I've seen the pictures of the Grenfell Tower before and after the cladding, and yeah, certainly it looks more in keeping with a modern sort of tower block. It looks more like a newer building, essentially. I suppose, you know, let's be honest, it probably does look a bit more attractive. If you were a buyer of a location of an apartment, it kind of looked like it just looked a little bit more, you know, in the image it gave off was a bit more that it was a modern building. But the problem you see is that why do they feel the need to do that? So they had. They spent 8.7 million on refurbishment, and it sounds like a lot of that was spent on the cladding, and they seem to neglect the basic fire regulatory things that you'd expect a tower block to have. So there were no sprinklers installed, and there was a faulty lift that apparently wasn't really working properly, and residents kept complaining about it, and nothing was done. All these little factors, but they erected this cladding, which apparently exists in around 100 or so other tower blocks all over the UK, and they went for a cheap option. So there are different types of cladding they can use, and it's this basically the aluminium sheets that are bonded together, and there's a company called Renolex, I think, or Rainlux or something like that, and there's another one called Ryden. So there's a lot of companies involved in this process, and they supplied these sheets, and I've seen some documents online that I think the Guardian published on an article about this, showing that this was the cheaper option that they went for. And the reason that this is pretty shocking stuff is because this cheaper option, it turns out, is banned in Germany, and it's banned in the US for buildings that exceed a certain height, which this tower block certainly did exceed, and I think it's also banned in Australia. But it's not banned in the UK, this cheaper cladding option. And the reason it's banned in these other countries is because it's highly flammable. Whereas the more expensive option is far more fireproof and resilient to heat. So why on earth was this stuff legal? This is where the scandal starts to hit home. Why on earth was this stuff allowed to be used in a modern building? It should have been, and this is where the buck has to sort of end somewhere. And ultimately, what's government for? Government's there to legislate. Government should be there to ensure that the fire safety is of the highest standard for all. And it seems that something's gone horribly wrong here, where actually what's happened is they've allowed this really cheap, nasty cladding to get used at this particular site. And hopefully that this is the only site where it's being used, but I'm reading that actually, no, there's a good chance this stuff is all over the place. And they're using it in a block of flats that is essentially inhabited by working class people, immigrants, and those that don't really have the money or the influence to sway this tenant management company who were responsible for the refurbishments. So you've got yourself here a real nasty picture of modern Britain, really. This is almost like a microcosm of all the things that are wrong and the social injustices that we face, I think, in this country at the moment. And I think that's why this story is becoming, I mean, obviously it's tragic in itself, but it feels like actually there's a bigger picture here, and this is almost like a symbol. This is almost like I say, a microcosm of a bigger problem, which is the fact that there's the them and us culture. There's the social elites and the people that are the lowest of the low, and that divide is just getting greater and greater and greater. And this area of Kensington is a serious contrast. You've got the north and the south divide, and you've got the rich and the poor all trying to kind of cohabitate. And there are many out there, I'm not so sure I can really embrace the sort of conspiracies at the moment, but I have to entertain the idea because you've got to be open-minded about the possibilities of things. But there are many that are saying, well, look, this is classic gentrification. And gentrification was a word that I think was coined by a psychologist in the 70s, but it's essentially the process of renovating and improving a house or district. And I'm reading a definition off one of the websites here, a dictionary, that conforms to middle class taste. So it is exactly what it says on the tin, as the saying goes. It's basically taking an area that's inherently working class, with all the working class pubs and just sense of identity, and basically altering it to appeal to a different social strata, really. So it's a kind of take on board middle class ideals and tastes, and to kind of just subtly nudge people out who don't meet the criteria of this new way of doing things. So there's gentrification going on in North Kensington, it seems. So many of the residents were up in arms about this, and they were calling this one out, saying, well, look, this fire is a way of knocking us out. It's a way of shoving us out, getting rid of this tower, and basically knocking us out. And apparently there was even a film in 2012 called Tower Block, and the whole story of the film, and I need to track this one down, was the idea that a tower was set on fire by an evil landlord, because they wanted to basically essentially evict, clear out the tower of all these undesirables and kind of start again and, yeah, gentrify the place. So I'm not saying I believe in the fact that this, in the idea that this may have been a deliberately set fire by an evil landlord. But the problem is what one thing you have to sort of say to yourself is, who, I know it sounds like a horrible thing to say, but who benefits from a situation like this? And the answer is, sadly, landowners. Because what's going to happen is that site will eventually get the go-ahead for regeneration and for something to get built in place of the tower. And it won't be another tower of that same spec for the same type of people. Sadly, it won't be. You can rest assured that place will become prime real estate for probably rich foreign investment, and it will just be yet another gentrified block, and that will be the end of it. And there's a lot to be said here. I mean, Jeremy Corbyn has said that all these people that are now homeless, they should be given access to some of these buy-to-leave properties, which is a horrible term, which I didn't even know about, but it's becoming quite popular in London to buy somewhere and to just do zero with it. Not move there, not rent it out, just basically sit on it. And that's awful. Shouldn't be allowed. Absolutely shouldn't be allowed when there's a housing crisis in the UK. And Corbyn has said, give people access to these buildings, but that won't happen, because they're privately owned, and I don't think we've got a government that would be willing to basically go down that road. Certainly would be a very radical thing to do. But look, in times of crisis, which is what this is, things need to change, things need to happen. But Theresa May's certainly not gonna allow for that kind of thing. So there's a little clip here I just want to play, which is this particularly, there's lots of stuff, but I found this particularly powerful. It's on Channel 4 News in the UK. Just I think this got these two residents just talk about the reality of what they saw on the ground on the day, and it just hits home what these people were dealing with and their perspective on it.
The people who died and lost their homes, this happens because they are poor. We are in one of the richest spaces, not just in London but in the world. Repeated requests were ignored. There is no way that rich people live in a building without adequate fire safety. Everyone I spoke to who was out there couldn't hear alarms. There was no sprinkler system.
There was no alarms.
But right. What's so German curious is that £8 million has been spent refurbishing.
Yeah, because it was an eyesore for the rich people that live opposite.
They put
panels, pretty panels on the outside, so the rich people opposite wouldn't have to look at a horrendous block.
If I didn't have this fob, people wouldn't have been able to get out the back of the block. All people were doing was throwing things up and making noise and trying to shout and get people up. But frankly, I don't know, like, I don't even think we should have done it, to be honest, John, because what did we wake them for? They just basically, they woke up and they were still trapped in that building and no one could get out.
So desperate were some that they jumped?
Some people jumped, yeah. I saw people jump. I know a lady who threw her kid out, but I didn't witness that myself. But I did see two people jump when I was at the back of the block roughly an hour or so after it started.
This is shocking stuff. I mean, how are you now? I mean, that's a horrible thing to live through.
It's, you just get on with it at the time, really. I mean, all I did at the time was I tried to get people to make noise. Then I went back inside. I knocked all of my neighbours' doors. I made as much noise as I could in there. I grabbed my neighbour and a 3.5-year-old kid upstairs. I came downstairs, I grabbed my dogs, and I got the hell out.
So they're talking there about the panels. I mean, there's lots of things there that were covered, and it's all pretty grim, but talking there about the panels that they put up because they felt the block was an eyesore, or that the those living in the other buildings, the more affluent buildings, saw it as an eyesore, so they wanted it to be improved, the externals to be improved. And that goes back to what I was saying about the cladding. And I can understand why they would say that, why their perspective is look, we didn't ask for that cladding. They, if they had had a say in how that money was spent as part of the refurbishment program, I doubt cladding was the first thing on their list. It was probably way, 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 way down the list, if there at all. They would have just wanted a working lift, improved internals, no doubt, sprinklers, a sense of safety, because sprinklers, I mean, there's debate about how effective sprinklers would have been in that situation, but I think it's pretty clear that it would have aided the firefighters because you would have had an environment that was safer for them to enter, because perhaps the sprinklers would have done a good job at least cooling down the area, and perhaps because the stairwell apparently was so hot that they couldn't even get up it. So the people on the higher floors were doomed. They were absolutely doomed. And it's pretty horrible reading the accounts from those higher floors, and that's something I did today that got me very, very sad. One particular story grabs me. I mean, there are many, but it's too much to take in, all of them. But there's one particular story. So there was an Italian couple who lived up on the 23rd floor, and they were young, mid sort of 20s, and they'd only just come to the UK about 3 months ago, architect students, architect graduates even. And they, what happened essentially was they were on the 23rd floor and they noticed the fire to begin with, but obviously to begin with it was low down on the third or fourth floor. But they made a point of calling their parents to just explain that there was something going on in their block, but more because it was just a bit of interesting information. I don't think they were particularly panicked at that point. But then the account goes that an hour later they made a phone call again and they said, look, this fire's getting pretty out of control now and it's coming up, but they were confident they were okay because they saw the firefighters and they saw that they were dealing with the fire. They were spraying it with water, hosing it down and stuff. But again, an hour passed, and this was around 3 a.m. now at the time, and this is where I think the couple were beginning to panic a little bit. I think they were attempting to leave, but they realised they couldn't because of the smoke, so they were basically stranded in their flat up on the 23rd floor. And they knew that they couldn't escape at that point, but they were still hopeful. And apparently then an hour later there was a final phone call where essentially they basically said their goodbyes, and they told their parents they loved them, and that was that. And they were saying that smoke was beginning to enter the apartment, and then the phone died, and then the parents have tried to call them many, many times since, and there's no response. So they are now categorized as missing, but sadly it's not looking good for them. And I noticed in the article that the girl's name was Gloria, her first name was Gloria, and I noticed online her Instagram profile was up. It's quite poignant when you see, and this is something I've experienced before, when you experience social media profiles of people that you know have sadly passed on, and it rings home. It does ring home. And there was a picture that they took not only a few days ago, I think, of their view from the tower block, which was very moving to see, and it was a lovely photograph. Fantastic. If the girl had taken these pictures, she was absolutely brilliant at taking photography. She had a real eye for it, and it was a rainbow, so she caught a really nice image of a rainbow from the view of the 23rd floor, and she was absolutely beautiful as well. They seemed like a lovely couple, and they had everything to live for. So it was very, very sad reading, and it just one of the many tragedies of this whole sorry event, really. So the Guardian has gone at great length to talk about the cladding, and I think it is looking more and more like what happened was the fire engulfed the building so quickly because of the cheap cladding, and it seems that it just basically caught a light and just enveloped the building because it just climbed up through all this cladding really quickly. So who's to blame for that, and This is why there's rage out there now. And I thought there may have been the catalyst here for some riots tonight. I'm not saying I was for it. I'm just saying I was expecting it to happen. But it didn't quite happen. But there is real rage out there. There's real anger. I was listening to LBC in the UK, which was a London-based sort of talk radio station. And every caller was fuming. They wanted heads to roll, but no one really knows who to blame. And sure, you've got to keep a level head at times like this. You've got to start looking for facts and not looking for an easy target. But one thing I would say is a name keeps coming up, Gavin Barwell. So he's an ex-housing minister who is now part of Theresa May's cabinet, but he's no longer a housing minister. But apparently in 2013 he was given a report based on the findings of a 2009 tower block fire. And this report essentially said that this is a problem. Cladding, cheap flammable cladding, is a problem because it can cause fire to envelop buildings from the outside. They can climb up from the external areas of the building. So internals weren't so much of a problem. Internal fire regulation is pretty tight. It's this external cladding, it's like almost like a grey area, which is unbelievable. And Gavin Barwell apparently did, or his team, or his, you know, it, obviously it's not just one person, it's a whole chain of people, a whole you know, civil servant army. They just sat on it. They didn't do anything about this report. So this was back in 2013. And he was and many mainstream media outlets have picked up on this, and he's refused to comment, as politicians always do, which is, I think, is shocking at a time like this. I think they really should stand up and be accounted for. They shouldn't just disappear. It's absolutely abhorrent that they're allowed to do that and get away with it. But it seems like nothing was done. So it's been known that this is a problem. It's been known that this is actually a real fire issue, and nothing was done. So, I mean, even John Humphreys on Radio 4, who's not somebody you'd expect to give somebody a hard time, he was attacking politicians for this. I can't remember who he had on, but he absolutely hammered them. Some representative of Theresa May's government, saying, why didn't you do something about this report? It was known about. And all he got was a load of platitudes in response, which just makes people even more pissed off, quite frankly. So there's now a petition as well, because Theresa May has said that there's going to be a public inquiry into this. But people don't want that. They want an inquest, which means that it can't be a whitewash. It means that we can actually get some real answers. And the government don't have control over everything. They don't have control over uncomfortable revelations, etc. We need it to be completely impartial. And there needs to be criminal proceedings. Because of, I think, personally, my perspective on this is that the government ultimately are to blame. Because they, at the end of the day, the government passes legislation. And that's really, you know, call the contractors and that what you will for doing the job of erecting the cladding. They were just doing it because it's a job. And they had a fixed price, they set the price. The Kensington Housing Management Association obviously wanted to get a job done, and they went for a cheap option. But they shouldn't have had that option. It should have been illegal. It's as simple as that. And it was not illegal. And I think, like a lot of people were saying, the problem we have in Britain, I think, is that we always react, but we don't anticipate things. It's almost as if we need something like this in order for the law to change. And yeah, sure, the law will change, no doubt. But why do we always have to have an event for that to happen? Why are we reacting to things and not preempting things and acting accordingly? Because it's not like this information isn't out there. It has been out there since 2013. So it's absolutely infuriating. And that's why I think this is absolutely a scandal. And I think Theresa May's attitude about the whole thing has been absolutely horrific to see. I can't see Theresa May lasting much longer, I must say. Because her whole attitude So she went, she didn't even meet any of the survivors at first. It was like a micromanaged PR stunt to meet the fire chiefs and stuff. But she refused to meet the actual residents until she realised the scale of the backlash, and then tried to, and that didn't work out well at all for her. Whereas Corbyn naturally just went and met them. And okay, there is an argument to suggest that, well, if Corbyn was Prime Minister, would he have actually done that still? You know what, I think he would have, because I just think I was never fully sold on Corbyn, but the more I see of the guy, the more I'm thinking he's a genuine human being with empathy. And that's what people want. They want politicians to actually show empathy, to actually be human. And it seems to me that that's something that Theresa May is pretty much incapable of doing at the moment. And I mean, I could go on really. There are so many things, but at the end of the day, I think what we've seen here this week in the UK is a disaster, a scandal, a tragedy, and something that really it's a microcosm of social injustice, I think, in the UK and the way society is going, gentrification, and the way that you've got these management companies treating tenants like shit, and the way that politicians in this kind of horrible government we've now got are just not really listening to people's concerns about things like fire safety. They seem to be more concerned about the way that they want to keep landowners happy and investors happy by not rocking the boat and making it difficult to build property because you need to install things like sprinklers. This is the problem. It's all about the bottom line. It's just all about money. That's the sense I'm getting out of this whole horrible event. And I just pray that those 70 plus souls, somehow that number's actually going to drop and not go up. Maybe many of them are in hospitals and they've still not been identified. Maybe, you know, maybe, just maybe, there may be some still in the tower block. Who knows? It's unlikely, I think. I think we are looking at probably around 100 or so deaths from what I'm seeing. And I just focused on one particular story with the Italian couple, which is well reported. But just the idea of being in that situation, if you're on the top floor of a building that's ablaze, you know that there's no way out. And apparently in other countries, it's legislation in many other countries for tower blocks to have more than one stairwell. But apparently in the UK, it's perfectly legal to build a tower block with one single stairwell. And the questions have got to be asked about that policy now, I think, because that basically became a bottleneck. If there had been two stairwells, maybe people would have got out. Some more people, at least, would have got out. Just maybe. But it kind of felt like, to me, it was, if you're at the top of a building that's burning and you know there's no way out, it's almost like something like the Wicker Man or something. You know that you're basically going to burn. And you've got a choice. You either jump or you burn. And many people were jumping. And many people were trying to erect parachutes out of bin liners and things. And it does make you wonder in that situation if there is literally anything you can do to survive. And it really does get you thinking. I mean, an idea I had is maybe getting a mattress, a big bed mattress, and just sort of lying on it and jumping with the mattress. I mean, yeah, I very much doubt it would make a lot of difference. But you think of these desperate measures, what you would do in that situation. And I know it sounds odd, but sometimes I think to myself, you know, maybe if you live in a tower block, you should have a parachute. I mean, obviously the chances of you ever needing to use it are almost zero, but maybe every building over a certain height, maybe it should be legislation to have a parachute in a communal area or something, just in case something goes horribly wrong. I mean, obviously that's honestly it's probably a silly suggestion, but I think the point I'm making is that you kind of wonder if there is anything that can be done to improve the chances of people in these situations, because there are obviously still many, many tower blocks around, not just in the UK but all over the globe. But I guess it all boils down to basic fire safety at the end of the day. If that fire hadn't have spread, then there wouldn't be a need for anything other than just remaining indoors, putting a wet towel under your door to prevent smoke, and just waiting. But the very sad thing about this is the fire brigade did tell people to do that at first. They said just remain indoors, lock your door, stay in your apartment. But they had to revise that because eventually they realised that no, this was like something they'd never had to deal with before. This was a fire that wasn't just isolated and causing some smoke issues. This was engulfing the entire building. And obviously once they realised that, they had to revise their advice about staying indoors, and basically they had to say, just get out. Just whatever you can do, get out. And I think there was a breakdown in communication, which I'm not saying is anybody's fault, but I'm just saying that unfortunately that's part of what happened here. And many people probably stayed in there for that, thinking that was the safest thing to do. But it all goes back to the cladding, I think. I think it all goes back to lack of legislation and perhaps a government that was more interested in the agendas and the opinions and requirements of a kind of property elite, and less interested in those of genuinely concerned tenants of a place that ultimately was controlled by a management company that didn't really give a shit. And yeah, it's a scandal, and I think this is going to become a national. There's already outrage, but I think this could grow. I really do think this could grow. But for now, I just think we need to remember the victims of this. And yeah, this is one of the nastiest things I've seen happen in the UK. I mean, we've had terrorist attacks recently, and they've been tragic and horrific, but I think what's so infuriating about this is these people did not need to die. And I know that's like a cliche people always say when things like this happen, but it was just some minor things, just basic cost cutting, I think, and a lack of legislation in key areas where there should have been legislation. And that's really what's caused 70 odd people to perish.
Where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.